standing so close that when he spoke, Frost could feel the heat of his breath. "How do you propose I'm not diverted?" he said.
"You keep both eyes open," Pritchard said. "Nielsen watches Anna, you watch the widow. Between the two of you, you've got them covered, you see. You watch Lydia Wells, no matter what. If she invites you to close your eyes or look elsewhere, they often do that, you know. Well, don't."
Frost felt a twinge of irritation at this. He wondered what right Joseph Pritchard had to allocate duties of surveillance at a séance to which he did not hold an invitation. And why was he assigned to the widow when Nielsen got Anna? He did not voice these complaints aloud, however, for a barmaid was approaching with a decanter on a tray. Both men filled their glasses, thanked her, and watched her move away through the crowd. As soon as she had left, Pritchard resumed with the same intensity.
"Staines has got to be somewhere," he insisted. "A man doesn't just vanish without a trace. What do we know for sure? Let us catalogue it. We know that Anna was the very last to see him alive. We know that she was lying about that opium, saying she'd eaten that ounce herself when I saw for myself that that was a plain-faced lie. And we know that now she's fixing to call him up from the dead."
It occurred to Frost suddenly that Pritchard's jacket fit him very ill, and that his necktie had not been pressed, and that his shirt was all but threadbare. Why, and his razor must be very blunt, Frost thought, to produce so uneven and patchy a shave. This criticism, internally voiced, gave him a sudden confidence. He said, "You don't trust Anna very much, do you, Mr. Pritchard?" Pritchard seemed taken aback by the assumption.
"There is ample reason not to trust her," he said coldly, "as I have just chronicled for you."
"But personally," Frost said, "as a woman, I gather that your impression of her integrity is very low."
"You talk of a whore's integrity,"
Pritchard burst out, but he did not go on. After a moment, Frost added, "I wonder what you think of her, that's all." Pritchard stared at Frost with a vacant expression.
"No," he said at last, "I don't trust Anna. I don't trust her a straw. I don't even love her. But I wish I did. Isn't that a curious thing? I wish I did."
Frost was uncomfortable. "Hardly worth 3 shillings, is it?" he said, referring to the party. "I must say I expected more." Pritchard seemed embarrassed also.
"Just remember," he said, "during the séance, keep both eyes on Mrs. Wells."
They turned away from one another, pretending to scan the faces of the crowd, and for a moment the two men shared the very same expression. The distant, slightly disappointed aspect of one who is comparing the scene around him unfavourably to other scenes, both real and imagined, that have happened and are happening elsewhere.
"Mr. Balfour, may I speak with you a moment alone?"
Balfour glanced up. It was Harold Nielsen, looking characteristically dapper in a vest of imperial blue. He saw on Nielsen's face the hardened expression of a man who is resolved to ask a difficult question, and his heart became heavy in his chest.
"Of course, naturally, naturally," he said. "You can speak to me, of course you can speak to me, naturally."
What fools men became, he thought, when they knew they were about to be shamed. He followed Nielsen through the crowd. When they were out of earshot of the parlour, Nielsen stopped abruptly.
"I'll get right to it," he said, turning on his heel.
"Yes," said Balfour, "get right to it. That's always best. How do you like the party?"
From the sitting room came a roar of laughter and a woman's indignant squeal.
"I like it very well," said Nielsen. "No sign of Anna, though."
"No."
"And 3 shillings," said Balfour. "That's a price. We'll be drinking our money's worth, won't we?"
He looked into his glass.
"I'll get right to it," Nielsen said again.
"Yes," said Balfour, "do."
"Somehow," Nielsen began, "Mr. Lauderback knows about my commission. He's publishing a letter in the paper about it tomorrow, lambasting Shepherd's character and so forth. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, dear, Balfour said. Oh, dear, yes, I see, I see. He nodded vigorously, though not at Nielsen. They were standing almost side by side. Nielsen was directing his speech at a framed print upon the wall, and Balfour at the wainscot. Governor Shepherd penned a reply, Nielsen went on, still addressing the print, which is to appear directly underneath Lauderback's in tomorrow's paper. I've seen the reply. Shepherd sent me a copy this afternoon. He gave a brief account of Shepherd's response, causing Balfour's anxiety to dissolve in a moment into pure astonishment. Well, he said, looking squarely at Nielsen for the first time, I'm blowed. That's a shark in shallow water, all right. Fancy Gov Shepherd coming up with something like that. Saying it's all your instigation, the investment, as a donation. I'm blowed. He's got you in a corner, isn't he? What a confident devil that man is. What a snake.
Did you tell Mr. Lauderback about my commission? Nielsen said.
No, said Balfour.
You didn't even mention it offhand.
No, said Balfour. Not a bit.
All right, Nielsen said heavily. Thanks. I'm sorry to have troubled you. I suppose it has to be one of the others.
Balfour started. One of the others?
You mean one of the fellows from the Crown?
Yes, Nielsen said.
Somebody must have broken his oath. I certainly didn't tell Mr. Lauderback anything, and I'm certain that nobody else knows about the investment beyond the 12 who swore.
Balfour was looking panicked. What about your boy? He said. Nielsen shook his head.
He doesn't know.
Someone at the bank, maybe?
No. It was a private agreement, and Shepherd has the only copy of the deed.
Nielsen sighed.
Listen, he said, I'm sorry for having sprung it on you, for having asked, you know, and doubted you. But I knew you were Lauderback's man, and, well, I had to make sure.
Naturally you did, of course. Nielsen nodded gloomily. He looked through the drawing-room doorway to the crowd beyond. To Pritchard, who stood a clear head taller than any other man in the room. To Devlin, who stood in conversation with Clinch. To Lerventhal, who was talking to Frost. To Mannering, who was refilling his glass from the decanter on the sideboard and laughing very freely at another man's joke.
Hang tight, said Balfour suddenly. You said that Shepherd's letter mentioned Lauderback and Lydia Wells.
Yes, said Nielsen uncomfortably. He's made their affair all but public knowledge, saying that Lauderback must come clean about her. That's the... Balfour interrupted him.